We're looking at the work of cutting carbon emissions and what that means in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. The California wildfires are dumping tens of millions of tons of carbon dioxide into our atmosphere. And a wildfire emissions expert in Amsterdam told The Washington Post last week that it's off the charts. So what does that mean for the air we breathe, for carbon credits, for our future energy mix? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Conversation, 800-642-1234. Scott Blankman is director of Clean Wisconsin's Air and Energy Program. He's responsible for policies on utilities, energy, and air issues. Scott, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. So what do the wildfires do to our air quality, especially here in Wisconsin?
Well, obviously, it has significant impacts in the California and the West Coast. When we think about where Wisconsin is, we've seen some significant and meaningful steps taken to accelerate Wisconsin's transition to carbon-free energy, which helps reduce the negative impacts of carbon pollution that ultimately contributes to climate change. The steps that we've seen over the course of the last year include Governor Evers' commitment to 100% carbon-free energy by 2050. We've seen utilities reacting to market signals and accelerating the retirement of coal plants and replacing them with zero carbon resources such as solar and wind, evidenced by Alliant Energy's announcement earlier this year that they're going to be installing 1,000 megawatts of solar. And then also just last week, the Public Service Commission's budget request increased funding for the state's Focus on Energy program, which can help drive down customers' electric and gas bills. So those are important steps that are happening here in the state of Wisconsin to try to combat the devastating impacts of climate change and ultimately, you know, contribute to some of the wildfires that we're seeing happen in California.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, go ahead.
Well, and I think you really frame this wonderfully. And starting with that first point you made about Governor Evers, who created, this push for 100% carbon free by 2050. What does that look like right now in our state? Are we on track?
Well, overall, if we would look at what the Strategic Energy Assessment just recently reported, is our 2018 carbon emissions have declined about 18% from 2005 levels. So we have a long way to go there. And the Strategic Energy Assessment also indicates that based off of utility projections, those carbon emissions are expected to decrease to about 40% by 2026. So even though we're seeing, you know, gradual changes, we still have a long way to go. And part of the reason for that is about 75% of our energy that's produced here in Wisconsin is still produced by fossil fuels, whether that's coal or natural gas. And as a result of that, our carbon intensity of our electricity, which really is a measure of the amount of carbon produced for each unit of electricity consumed here, is still very high compared to national averages. And I think that's where there's a tremendous opportunity to accelerate the transition to clean and renewable energy here in the state.
So you're saying that we really need to look at our energy mix and ensure that utilities are changing their energy mix in order to really get the ball rolling on carbon free.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. So I think we do need to recognize that two of the largest investor-owned utilities in Wisconsin, Alliant Energy and the WEC Energy Group, joined Xcel Energy and Madison Gas and Electric in committing to 2050 net zero carbon reduction targets, which is certainly in line with the Evers administration goal of 100% carbon-free energy by 2050. Alliant has increased their interim goal to a 50% reduction in carbon by 2030 and to eliminate all coal in their fleet by 2040. And the WEC Energy Group has committed to a interim goal of 70% in carbon reductions by 2030. So those are positive trends, and we applaud the utilities' commitments and goals. And while we are pleased by these longer-term goals, we really would like to see them accelerate the pace of their transition and have this sense of urgency to reduce carbon emissions even faster.
Well, Scott, with people staying at home during the pandemic, how have you seen the numbers change on carbon emissions?
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up. You know, one of the environmental storylines that's drawn attention during the COVID-19 pandemic has been the dramatic improvement in air quality seen in cities around the globe as people stay home during the shutdown. These were largely driven by a reduction in vehicle traffic as well as reduced, you know, emissions from utility and industrial production. And although we recognize that it isn't appropriate to celebrate these reductions as an environmental victory, it does provide us some insight into what sorts of improvements could be achieved if we address air pollution in a deliberate manner. And when we think about this in terms of Wisconsin, there definitely was an observable decline in both carbon monoxide and nitrogen dioxide concentrations following Governor Evers' public health emergency declaration earlier this spring.
Well, let's pause there with Scott Blankman. He's part of Clean Wisconsin's Air and Energy Program as we look at carbon emissions. We'll continue this conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the next phase of net zero and carbon neutral and the work of reducing carbon emissions on the morning show. States are making pledges. Giant companies are making pledges. General Electric announced this week it will no longer build new coal-fired power plants. AT&T and Walmart have also re-upped their timelines for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. What are you watching for? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Scott Blankman analyzes utility and energy policies as part of the organization Clean Wisconsin, and he's our guide. Scott, what do you make of these giant corporations like AT&T and the Walmarts, the GEs of the world, making these commitments to becoming more aware of their energy mix and their carbon footprint?
I think that's a significant trend. I think they're listening to their customers that are driving them forward in that path and also recognizing that they have a responsibility and contribute to the negative impacts of climate change. So I think it's a step in the right direction. And I also think that it signifies the strength that we as consumers can have on the companies that we buy products from. Let them know what your expectations are. And I think that helps contribute to some of the change that we're seeing here.
So as we were mentioning there in the pandemic and you seeing the dramatic reduction during stay-at-home orders of our air and what is in it, how do you see the pandemic helping to maybe speed up the process of our state transitioning to cleaner and renewable energy sources or holding us back?
I think that we see the impacts of that, of the pandemic manifesting themselves in multiple ways in the energy sector currently. First, I think we see lower demand for energy. Overall, demand has declined about 3 to 5%, depending on utility and the geographic region. Residential customers, though, are using more electricity because they're working from home, and we're seeing estimates that that's increasing by about 5% or so, while commercial and industrial customers are using less, obviously, as more people are working from home. We're also seeing energy prices lower as a result of the pandemic, and that's largely driven by the lower demand as well as lower natural gas prices, which have declined about 20% year over year. And the lower natural gas prices have caused a significant change in the energy mix and a reduction in the energy produced by coal plants in the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator market, which is the market that the Wisconsin utilities sell their energy into as well as buy their energy back from. So coal has declined in April, as an example, from 35% of MISO's energy mix in 2019 to 25% in April of 2020. And the EIA continues to forecast that coal's production will decline anywhere between 10 to 15% this year.
So that's the U.S. Energy Information Administration that really keeps track of these numbers.
That's absolutely correct. And these trends that we're seeing happening in the marketplace have also contributed to utilities here in the state taking a harder look at the economics of their remaining coal plants. And when Alliant Energy announced its early retirement of Edgewater Unit 5, they also acknowledged that the pandemic did have an impact on its operations. And we would expect anyway that there are other plants in the state that are also, under risk of early retirement, and we see that as an opportunity to accelerate the pace of the change.
And as you mentioned, the numbers from the EIA, the Energy Information Administration, it shows that coal plants, even the ones that are still operating, are doing so for fewer hours than in years past when you look at those decade trends. What do you make of that?
That is truly an indication that the market does not value their energy production because it is more costly. When we think about how MISO dispatches its resources, it dispatches its lowest cost resources first. Mm-hmm. So when you see coal plants have lower capacity factor or lower utilization, it is simply another signal that the market says that they're more expensive than lower cost resources such as solar and wind energy.
Our guide this hour is Scott Blankman. He works on policies on utilities, energy, and air issues as part of Clean Wisconsin. What questions do you have about net zero, about cap and trade, about carbon credits, other concepts in the pursuit of clean energy and addressing climate change? Where do you want the focus to be as we tackle our warming planet? It's 800-642-1234 to join the conversation. We'll continue this ahead. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Climate change, it is a critical issue across our world and, of course, in Wisconsin. We're looking at carbon emissions, where we're headed amid the pandemic, the wildfires, the winding down of coal-fired power plants, and what that means. We've been talking about that most recent data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration that shows that the coal plants that are still operating are doing so for fewer hours than in years past. What questions do you have about reducing your carbon footprint? What are you doing in your life to cut carbon emissions? It's 800-642-1234. That's conversation right here. Scott Blankman is director of Clean Wisconsin's Air and Energy Program. He stays with us. So, Scott, we got Teresa from McFarland who called in, couldn't stay with us. Wanted to ask you, Teresa wants to know about recycling. And, Teresa doesn't really trust it anymore and keeps hearing that plastics eventually end up in the trash. What is happening with recycling?
Well, we certainly have seen the single-use plastics increasing in usage, whether it's from plastic bags or takeout containers or shipping materials during the pandemic. And we've also seen, some plastic bag restrictions either having been lifted across the country or some of the bans that have been implemented have been delayed. So I think there definitely is an increase in higher volumes of residential waste and recycling, which is leading to some problems with recycling markets across the country. But I think to try to respond to the listener's question, I think obviously we continue to encourage people to try to reduce the amount of plastic that they use, look for opportunities to reuse anything that they would have. And then if they can't do that, then certainly go ahead and recycle. So I think we would certainly encourage to do that. And it's probably more important now than ever.
I'm just hearing that we're living almost in this world of trade-offs in the pandemic, carbon emissions down because fewer cars on the road, but we're, building up more trash at home, using more plastics. And it leads me to what I want to ask you about in the whole carbon marketplace and how we sort through carbon credits and carbon offset. Where are we headed with carbon credits? And can you explain that marketplace?
Well, I think one way of looking at it is looking at what California has in place, where they basically look at the overall fuel content or carbon intensity of fuel. So, for example, the diesel fuel would have a significantly higher carbon impact. And if you look at biogas, you know, that would be derived, for example, from cow waste, has a much lower carbon impact when you look at that. And that has led to a significant increase in the ability for Wisconsin's biodigesters, instead of producing electricity, to effectively clean up the waste from the biodigesters and inject that methane into the natural gas pipelines and essentially get carbon credits, because companies in California have to be able to find ways in which to reduce their carbon intensity, and they will essentially purchase carbon credits from gas that's been injected here in Wisconsin. So that is an example of how public policy can influence, you know, the direction of where states are moving.
Yeah, and, you know, countries have called California's cap-and-trade program the answer to climate change. I mean, pretty bold claims, but, you know, the revenue generated in California's program really can't be ignored either. Can you explain what the future holds for programs like cap-and-trade?
I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out in many regards. The whole cap and trade ends up being a bit of a political conversation. But mm-hmm. I think the broader question is if we look at Wisconsin, you know, we've made significant progress or gradual progress in the power sector in reducing our carbon emissions. Yet when we look at our transportation sector since 2005, we've only reduced our emissions of carbon by about 5%. So there are significant opportunities here in Wisconsin, and I think that there are some positive signs that we are looking at that. The Climate Task Force is considering numerous recommendations that address carbon emissions from the transportation sector. We've seen the Public Service Commission approve Xcel Energy's electric vehicle charging program for residential and commercial customers. And they've also just recently required investor-owned utilities to come forward with electric vehicle pilot programs in 2021. So when we think about those actions, and then you layer on top of that what Xcel Energy recently announced, that it is looking to complement its 2050 100% carbon-free energy goal on their power sector side, they're looking to expand the number of electric vehicles to 1.5 million across their 8-state service territory by 2030. And if we think about those actions where the market and policy are driving us forward, I think that helps, you know, move us more towards looking at this on a holistic basis and being able to come up with multiple options to be able to you know, implement a cap and trade sort of program that's also market-based.
We're talking with Scott Blankman, who directs Clean Wisconsin's Air and Energy Program, as we look at the state of carbon emissions, air quality, as it relates to our warming planet. Let's bring in Paris in Muskego. Hi, Paris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, so I'm currently looking into solar panels, and I've gotten a few different quotes from different companies, but it seems like We Energy is not very solar friendly, in the sense that what they do is they essentially do a net zero meter reading. So once a month they look at your production, and then they look at your consumption, and then they just kind of cancel each other out, whatever, they take the difference. So that means that if you produce, you know, a lot of solar one month, but then you don't produce enough, a lot of solar energy another month, it doesn't really take that into account as an average for the year. So is there anything that we can do to try to get utilities such as We Energies to be more, to incentivize solar?
Paris, thank you. Yes, Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I had solar on my home as well, and I think the first thing that I would recommend is make sure that you're doing as much energy efficiency and energy conservation as you can before installing solar. That way you make sure that you're sizing your solar system properly for your home. I think the issue is that when you overproduce, you know, the utility is only going to provide you with the marginal cost of energy as compensation. So you want to try to avoid that. I also think that there's currently a case in front of the Public Service Commission that is looking at, you know, third-party ownership in Wisconsin that could potentially also influence the longer-term trend with regards to solar and how it plays out here in Wisconsin. But yes, the utilities are trying to find an appropriate balance between how much did they compensate you for the excess energy that you produce.
Let's bring in Emily now in Milwaukee. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I just watched a Netflix documentary last night about how industrial farming is damaging soil and how you can reverse a lot of climate change by covering areas with plants and like just grasses in areas. And I wasn't aware whether like this desertification is an issue in Wisconsin, but are there any programs to try to add more plants and improve soil to combat climate change? Or is that like a fringe view?
Emily, thank you. Scott, what about returning our soil, improving soil and creating grasslands?
I think that's definitely something that's being looked at within the Climate Change Task Force, basically looking at how do you sequester carbon in agricultural land. I would also maybe highlight that there are some things that are happening in this regard when you look at larger scale utility solar installations where they will plant perhaps prairie grasses or other wildflowers in and around the solar arrays. As a way to be able to address erosion and also to be able to return the soil to its natural sort of state as another way in which to be able to sequester carbon in the soil.
I want to circle back to retiring coal plants here as we start to wrap up. You know, as utilities are doing this, taking coal plants offline, what are some of the considerations that they may have that influence the retirement decision of these massive plants and winding them down?
I think that's an excellent question, and I think an important question. You know, if we look at what the Strategic Energy Assessment has highlighted, it highlights the fact that Wisconsin residents have faced higher utility rates over the last decade when compared with national and Midwest averages. And when utilities are retiring these coal plants early, they have large investments that have been made in those plants for a variety of reasons. And ultimately, one of the things that the utilities will need to address as they look to try to control customer rates and costs is what options are available to them. And securitization is an example of an option that's available to them that effectively allows them to refinance those investments at a much lower cost than what they currently are earning on those. And as a result of that, that refinancing benefit ultimately flows through to customers. And then you can also see significant benefits coming through from having lower cost energy being produced from solar and wind, which has zero production costs. So all of those collective benefits can help offset some of the negative impacts of these large remaining investments.
Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be part of it.
Scott Blankman is Director of Clean Wisconsin's Air and Energy Program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.